What Bitcoin Did podcast.
Hi there, welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast. I'm your host Peter McCormack and I'm recording this intro on the morning of January the 1st, so it is officially 2019. So happy new year to everyone. Are you all okay? Did some of you have a big night? Are any of you nursing a hangover? I feel pretty refreshed. I didn't have such a big night. I went out to the cinema, so I'm officially old. But anyway, it's 2019, so let's make this a big year. Let's make some Bitcoin, let's make some cool businesses, and let's make some great podcasts. And what better way to start off the year with the amazing Meltem Demirez, the benevolent mischief maker, crypto investor, and advisor. But first, I do have a message from my show sponsors, BlockFi. And if you're a regular listener to the show, you will know these guys. But if you haven't, I recommend you check out my interview with Zach Prince, their CEO, which was episode 51, which actually I saw one person on Twitter vote as their podcast of the year, which is pretty cool. So a lot has happened for BlockFi in 2018, and there's a lot coming for them in 2019. So last year they launched their loans product, and they also raised an additional round of funding to grow their crypto banking services. So much cool stuff is coming for these guys, so definitely check them out. And if you are interested in a loan, whether you're looking to pay off your credit cards or buying a house, BlockFi helps crypto investors use their Bitcoin, Ether, and Litecoin without selling. BlockFi is the leading crypto to USD lender in the US. They service over 46 states and have interest rates as low as 7.9%. So if you visit blockfi.com/whatbitcoindid, you can learn more about using your crypto without having to sell. Okay, so on to my interview with Meltem. I'll be honest, I was a little bit nervous with this one. After I heard her interview with Pomp and listened to them both get into the weeds about finance, I realized how little I personally know about this. And what was funny in prepping for the interview, I found out that her show with Jill Carlson, which is called Grind My Gears, which if you haven't checked out, I recommend you do, is going to be relaunching soon with a focus on finance. So that's going to be good for me. So I can't wait to check that out. I've also been chatting with Meltem a little bit in prep. And you know what? I had nothing to worry about. This was one of the most fun and relaxed podcasts I've ever recorded. We talked about a whole bunch of things. We talked about chess and Monopoly, which was kind of interesting. But we also talked about what happened to crypto in 2018. We compared it to 2017. We looked at the lessons that we may have learned. Meltem also tells me what she thinks about the various categories of crypto. And then we also look forward to 2019, setting both our personal and market crypto New Year resolutions. So that was pretty cool. Make sure you follow Meltem. Go and check out her website. Check out her investments. She's got so much skin in the game. She also sets out her personal disclosures, which is pretty cool. And one of my favorite things about Meltem is her ability to change her opinion and admit when she is wrong, something we are definitely missing in crypto land. Okay, so I hope you enjoy the show, but first I do have to give you a slight warning about profanity. I did get an email from somebody once who was disappointed with a bit of swearing in a previous show, so listen, me and Meltem do swear in this one. There are some S-bombs, some F-bombs that fly around, so apologies in advance if you don't like swearing. Maybe you don't want to listen to this one if it's a problem for you, but if you don't mind that, I do hope you enjoy the show. And also, just a couple of things to tell you about. Sorry, it's going to be a longer intro. First show of the year, please accept it. But just a couple of things to tell you about. I've been tweeting about side gigs and marketing and various things that I've got a bit of a background in. And a few people reached out to me who want to launch their own business. So I'm going to do this side gig course. If you haven't seen me, mention it on Twitter. It's just going to be an online course where I'm going to create a business and you can follow along step by step, you know, coming up with the idea, creating the brand, setting up your website and launching the business. So it should be a lot of fun. If you want to launch a side gig or you want to do a business and you don't know where to start, you will be able to follow this literally step by step, copying exactly what I do to create your own online business. So that should be a lot of fun. There's a link in the show notes to register about that. And also, I'm going to be heading out to Tonevay's Unconfiscated conference at the end of January. With the Bitcoin Protocol launch 10-year anniversary this Thursday, I'm going to be doing a kind of 10-year Bitcoin State of the Nation series where I'm going to interview a bunch of the leading minds in Bitcoin, where I want to look back at the last decade, but also talk to them about the next 10 years and what they expect and what they would like to see. And I'm going to try and do this in specific kind of categories, technology, economics, etc. So keep an eye out for that. Listen, if you want to support the show, there's a section on my website. If you head over to www.whatbitcoindid.com, click on the support section, a whole bunch of ways you can help me out. So please check that out. And I do want to thank my first patron top tier sponsor, Elite Crypto Consulting, your personalized trading teacher. Thank you guys for supporting the podcast. Okay, so onto the interview. If you have any questions, then feel free to reach out to me. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com, and I look forward to hearing from you. Hello there, Meltem. How are you?
I'm delightful. How are you?
I'm good. We finally get to do this after a couple of false starts.
We've tried. But you know what? Sometimes I don't have anything new to say. And why waste valuable listener time and air time or energy if I don't have anything interesting to say?
And more importantly, we were scheduled yesterday, and then when I looked at my diary, we were due to record at 5 o'clock, and at 5:30, Liverpool were playing Arsenal in a huge game, and you tracked the score, right?
I did. My father went to university in Manchester, and I spent a year and a half working in Scotland, and I studied a year in Cambridge. So a little bit of that UK football mania has diffused into me. And yeah, I've been tracking British football for a while. And one of my cousins actually played football in Turkey as well. So yeah, it was a big upset. Like, they spanked Arsenal, just wiped the field with them.
We spanked them. You've definitely spent some time in England. So you lived in Cambridge. Did you ever get to visit Bedford?
I did not, no. I would go to London on the weekends. I was in school 4 days a week at Trinity, Christ and King's. I was studying Keynesian economics, and what better place to go than Cambridge, where Keynes himself studied and wrote many of his books. And so I would spend my weekends in London, where the fun was.
Yes. But don't you also do something in Oxford?
I do. So I partnered with one of my advisors at MIT to create an online course with the Said Business School on blockchain strategy. So it's intended for business professionals, people who are looking to switch careers, who are really trying to understand the basics of blockchain cryptocurrency. And then I recently did a free version, a really condensed version with Skillshare, just to help people understand the basics and to give them some of my perspective, which is arguably very specific.
That's actually not far from where I was born, because I was born in Reading. So that's my other football team.
Oh, nice. Yeah, it's a beautiful part of the country.
It is. Okay, so listen, I'm not going to do the origin story. You've done it on every other podcast I've heard, apart from one little bit, because you and I had a little conversation about board games, and especially relevant this time of year. So you mentioned to me that you were taught chess by your father, I think you told me, and I also bought a chess set for my son, because I was fed up of every day watching him leave his room with his phone in front of him, watching YouTube, walking around the house. So we bought a chess set, and we've managed to get a couple of games in. He's not that enthused yet, but I'm sticking with it. But you did the same, right?
I did. And I actually joined. So I started playing chess with my dad. And before chess, we played backgammon. So backgammon's big in Turkey. I played with my dad. I played with my grandfather, who, by the way, is a very mean backgammon player. And then I got into chess when I was around 6 or 7. And on Friday nights, I would, you know, like a cool kid, go to chess club. And then I started playing speed chess. And what was cool about chess is when you're playing speed chess, you're forced to make strategic decisions. And it's sort of evaluating all possible potential paths and trying to determine, okay, what moves can you make that aren't going to lock you into a certain path that gives you the most optionality while still being strategic. That was sort of my approach. So it's fun.
And we also talked about Monopoly.
The
thing about Monopoly is, for me, I think Monopoly is a very important life lesson, in that it teaches you about, you know, capitalism
and rent seeking.
Yes. But it teaches you to cheat a little. Like, it's openly accepted that you can cheat in Monopoly. Like, everyone knows you can.
Well, I don't call it cheating. So I think the conversation you and I had was, there are rules, right? And rules, I think, are always kind of flexible, especially in a game like Monopoly. And at the end of the day, if there are two people who want to make a deal, what's stopping them from making a deal? So if you want to have little side deals, little side bets, that's why I love Catan. You know, you can gang up on people, you can form little cartels. I always like getting a cartel going for a specific resource. You know, if I can dominate rock production, then I know I can win the game.
No, I physically steal from the bank when I play Monopoly.
Oh, you steal? Oh, yeah. That's boring cheating, though. I want really elaborate schemes, kind of like ICOs, right? Like, why do a scam the old-fashioned way? Why do a pyramid scheme or a Ponzi scheme when you can do something really convoluted that no one really understands?
Yeah, I guess. Well, listen, look, I think Monopoly is important. Actually, they've released the Cheaters Edition, which I think is terrible. Like, what's the point?
What's the Cheaters Edition?
It's a game that, well, I eventually bought it. I saw it in Toys R Us. There's a Cheaters Edition of Monopoly. I think you can get rewarded for cheating, which I kind of think defeats the object, right?
That's real messed up. You don't want to teach your children to cheat at a young age. You want to teach them that the rules are flexible. Cheating comes at a later age.
All right. Well, listen, look, there's a lot to unpack. This is going to be the first show of the year. We're going to cover our crypto 2019 resolutions. Yep. But so where I wanted to start with you, Riz, because I came into this a lot later than most people. I've experienced all of 2017 and all of 2018, and they've been entirely different. 2017 was this massive bull run, lots of money to be made. It was loads of fun. Then 2018 has been this horrible bear market. Looking back, despite the huge losses, I actually think 2018 has been a better year and a more important year. But how do you feel?
Sure. I'd start by saying, I think a lot of people talk about crypto in terms of when they got involved. And I really want us to move past that. We need to create a culture where whether you showed up 10 years ago and are Satoshi themselves, or whether you showed up a day ago, equally welcome. That's certainly my view. So I think all of us have lived through similar things and everyone goes through the same journey. So I try to empathize. I started working in crypto professionally. I was deeply in debt. I just left graduate school and I was like, screw it. I'm going to go work in Bitcoin. This will be fine. No worries. And so I started at the bottom of a pretty vicious bear market in 2015. And so to me, this year has felt fine. I think a lot of the things that need to happen are going to happen over the next 12 to 18 months, and that's exciting. And we're going to see new challenges emerge, but I actually don't think that much has changed from when I started working in crypto in early 2015. It's a lot of the same problems, just on a grander scale. I think what's interesting about 2017, and I've openly admitted this and I wrote about it as well, is we all got caught up in this hype. We all got caught up in believing things that we knew fundamentally to be untrue, right? We knew it was unsustainable. We knew it wasn't actually physically possible. It's like perpetual motion, right? So I'll go back to sort of the science references. So there are three fundamental laws of the universe, laws of thermodynamics, right? And then there's a zeroth law, which removes circular referencing. But we know certain fundamental truths about the universe. And one of them is that energy cannot be created or destroyed. And so for centuries, scientists have pursued this perpetual motion machine that would defy the laws of thermodynamics. And they've tried everything, and things work for a while, but inevitably they fail. And I feel like 2017 and ICOs and all of this money that was just being created out of thin air was the crypto version of a perpetual motion machine. And I think it happens in other asset classes. I think it's sort of fallacious for people who come from other asset classes to say, oh, crypto is bad. It's like, look, this happened in real estate. We've seen real estate bubbles. It's happened in stocks. It happened with internet stocks. We've seen it in different asset classes. I think with crypto, it just took on a very different life because crypto blends, it's not just investing. For people, it's like it's ideology, it's social belief, it's philosophy. It's so many different things wrapped in one that it created this crazy sort of fervor that was tinged with almost a religious revival. I think to a lot of us going to blockchain conferences in late 2017, early 2018, like people would get on stages and talk about decentralization and people would be cheering and, you know, people were worshiping different developers. It was just, it's so surreal thinking back on it. And what's funny is when I was in it, you know, I kind of had my wake up moment in March of 2018 when I wrote this post called Drowning in Tokens. But man, I was a part of it just like everyone else. And it felt kind of good. We want to believe, like as humans, we want to believe that, you know, the impossible is possible, going back to alchemy. So for a while, I believed it. And so 2017 was fun. But I think a lot of the people who came because of ICO mania, they've stayed, right? A good portion have stayed. Look at yourself, right? You made a bunch of money. You then lost a lot of it. But you're still here. And your excitement isn't diminished. You're just wiser having had this experience. Hopefully. I don't want to speak for you.
Oh, but no, it's true. And I got to fly first class for my first time.
You did? Where'd you go?
I was in LA, and
yeah,
it's the funniest story and the most stupid thing, right? So I was in LA, and I had a date booked with a girl back in England, and I was going to land in the evening, and I was so tired, I thought, I've got all this money. I'm going to get a first class flight, right? But I didn't really have the money because I never cashed in, and I paid for the flight on my credit card. But I flew first class for the first time. So, you know, I think it was all worth it for that. And I went.
Did
on
you
a
enjoy
date.
It?
It was a great date. We dated for 3 months. She's a lovely girl. It didn't work out, but I got to. No, I'll tell you my problem with first class is that you pay to sleep, and that's pointless. So I actually think I actually prefer premium and economy because I've got a bit more space, but I stay awake and enjoy the flight.
Yeah. I mean, I've never really heard someone say they enjoy a transatlantic flight. So you, my friend, are a unique creature.
I enjoy coming over.
Yeah, coming to the US or going back to the UK.
No, coming to the US.
Oh, okay. And then going back, it's like, oh, I just want to black out and forget this happened. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, first class is an interesting experience. I just get annoyed because they're constantly waking you up and they're trying to be really helpful. But after a certain point, I'm like, that's enough. Like, just leave me alone. So I do the thing where you get the meal all at once. I'm like, just bring me a glass of wine, like the little cheese plate, and then I'm just going to pass out. And you do pay to sleep. It's bananas.
I didn't sleep the whole way because I didn't want to miss out on having all the free expensive champagne. I was like this total amateur doing first class. I think everyone was thinking, who is this guy covered in tattoos?
No. I did that my first, I remember I'd flown business class before, but when the Airbus A380 came out, it flew between Houston and Frankfurt. I booked a first class seat, not business class, but first. It's like fancy and then the fanciest because I had all these points. I was like, screw it. I'm going to do this. And I stayed awake the whole flight. I think I drank about 4 bottles of champagne by myself. And I went in Frankfurt. I got transferred by limo or by Mercedes-Benz to the next plane that took me to Istanbul. My parents met me in Istanbul. And I was like laying on the baggage claim, just so hungover. Mistakes were made.
Well, listen, look, I'm now back to economy. I can't even afford premium economy. I'm on the middle seat. We've got another year ahead of us now, so I've got to make this back. So come on, if we look back at 2018, what are the biggest lessons that everyone should have learned to take forward for next year?
I think lesson number one is never stop asking questions. A lot of people in 2017 and 2018 didn't ask questions. I myself, again, the first few quote unquote ICO deals I personally invested in, I didn't ask questions because when I asked questions, I was made to feel dumb. Or people were like, oh, you don't understand decentralization. And I was like, well, but this doesn't make sense. I'd like to think I'm a logical person and what you're telling me doesn't make sense. So can you answer this? In one case, I asked for a budget. This was a project raising a lot of money. And I was like, okay, well, what are you going to spend all this money on? They were like, if you don't want to invest, you don't have to be in this deal. So I think a lot of us just didn't ask questions. We didn't do our own research. And I think this goes back to, you know, Benjamin Graham, his idea of value investing is invest in things you know and understand. I think a lot of us just invested in things we didn't understand. And then when it all fell apart, we started looking at everyone else in the deal and going, hey, did you understand it? And they were like, no, I thought you did. I invest because you did. And then we figured out no one knew what was going on. So I think one is just ask questions and understand. If you don't get it, don't invest in it because you're going to feel stupid when it fails. And I certainly learned that. Luckily for me, I think I learned it fairly quickly. And the size of mistakes I made, fortunately, was still fairly small. I think the second thing I learned was be careful about who you do business with. And there, you know, having been in crypto for 5 years now, there are a lot of characters who've been around for a while. They've been part of things that haven't worked out in the past. People like to try to reinvent themselves. And I feel like every 2 or 3 years, the same characters sort of reemerge with a new scheme to reinvent themselves. And I just don't believe that people really fundamentally change, right? It's one of these interesting truths. And so there were just certain projects, no matter the hype, no matter who was involved, I just wasn't going to touch it because I knew who those people were at their core. And while I wish success for everyone, I don't actively want, you know, anyone to be unsuccessful. I knew for me that those were not people I wanted to spend time with and that I just had not had a good experience with those people. And so I wasn't going to be complicit in helping them do something that I knew at its core probably was not well-intentioned. And then I think the third piece goes back to just thinking about macro markets in general. And that's, we all got sucked into a bubble. And I think we forgot that outside of this little crypto bubble we were all in, where we were flying around the world, feeling cool, going to conferences, like being rock stars, which we aren't. We're just a bunch of nerds with fake internet money, right? People are like, ah, I'm so cool. I'm like, you're a nerd. You're a rich nerd, but you're a nerd. Crypto doesn't exist in a bubble. There's this whole big world out there. There are a lot of really interesting things going on with politics, with art and culture, with society, with, you know, sciences, and the macro market. Crypto is correlated to broader macro market. We're just trying to figure out the directionality. For a while, it was positively correlated, meaning when the macro market goes up, crypto goes up. And for a while, it was negatively correlated, meaning when the market went down, crypto went up. So I think we can't forget about the broader market landscape, especially right now. We're in a market where investors of all stripes, allocators of all stripes, including institutional investors and retail investors, are feeling very uncertain about the future, right? There's a lot of fear, there's a lot of doubt, there's a lot of anxiety. And so what people do in those situations is they remove risk. They try to de-risk. And one of the first assets they're going to de-risk is their crypto positions. And so I think what we forgot is there was this broader market climate where things were going up, 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 up. And in the fourth quarter, you know, we saw all of those gains in stock market evaporate. A lot of stocks in the US are down 20 to 30% right now. And for a while, you know, equities volatility exceeded crypto volatility over a rolling 90-day window. So I think that's really interesting to keep in context, is what's the psychology of everyone else around you? Because it influences how people are going to play games, going back to the Monopoly analogy. And so just getting outside of that bubble, I started doing this more actively after Blockchain Week in New York, when I realized just how tone deaf the crypto community was. And I just wanted a break. I wanted to spend time talking to people who were actually doing interesting things and not just manufacturing one ICO after another. And so I went to a few branding conferences focused on consumer products, because I think Bitcoin needs better branding for consumers. I went to some academic events focusing on robotics and AI. I started listening to a lot of podcasts outside of the crypto space. And so it's just healthy and I think good to go and mix in all of these different little spheres and to bring that collective knowledge back to this crypto bubble. That was a lot, but those are my three things.
Well, I think the finance thing is really important. So I remember, so I don't understand anything about finance. I'm really disorganized. When I had my advertising agency, I had a business partner and I was the lunatic ideas person. He was the organized one. He ran the company and the numbers. I'm just not that kind of, I'm not finance orientated. He organized for us to have pensions. And when we had our pension meeting with the pension provider, they explained to us that essentially there's three pots of money you can put in. Here's our super safe one. Here's our medium safe. And here's our high risk. And this is what can happen. Don't do the high risk. And so I compare that to crypto. And I'm like, there's this like much higher level of risk. And there's been an inflow of people who've got no idea about finance, no idea about how markets or capital markets work or how money works, like myself, who've suddenly started investing and then have been burned. How do you feel about that?
There are two ways I view it. I got excited about Bitcoin because Bitcoin gives people choice. Not everyone in the world needs to buy or own Bitcoin, but I don't want to hold just US dollars and equities. I like what Bitcoin represents. And to me, the idea that I now have this choice, that's incredible. But I don't think it's for everyone. And what I go back to, what I've always said to people is never invest more money than you're willing to lose, because this could all go to zero. And I think there are also like risk management is the number one thing I think about as someone who's in the asset management space. Like my number one job is managing risk for my clients and ensuring that the only risk they're exposed to is the risk of the actual investing strategy itself. Not my operational risk, not my regulatory risk, not my legal risk, not my custodial risk. The only risk people should be buying when they pay someone to manage their assets is the risk of that strategy, right? That's why people like to place assets with large, respected asset managers, because really the brand and the trust is what matters when someone else is managing your money, or in this case, managing your crypto. I think one side of me says, okay, we need better risk management in the space, but the whole point of crypto was to enable open permissionless finance. And so part of that also means that we shouldn't try to dictate what people do. So if you have a bunch of people who want to get rich quick, which is what we all want at our core, because we're greedy little people, we intuitively, whatever human wants is a big red button. You know how Staples had those advertisements where they had the big red button and said easy, and you pushed it and like a stapler showed up on your desk? For a lot of people, the way they viewed crypto was, this is a money button. I'm going to hit this easy button and then I'm going to be rich, because everyone was doing it. And that's not how markets, that's not how investing works. And the thing I've been trying to figure out is, most tokens are actually, in fact, a zero-sum game. They don't create any new value. They're a zero-sum game where money moves from one person's pocket to another person's pocket. And unfortunately, retail gets burned. And I've talked about this at length with this idea of the quote-unquote shitcoin waterfall. And we see this in a lot of these more thinly traded assets where there's no new value creation. It's just people passing the bag. And really, the price of the token is a sentiment machine, right? It's a reflection of how people feel about crypto overall and their ability to make money with a certain token. It doesn't reflect any fundamentals. I think the hard part is when retail investors are getting burned to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars, when people are losing their homes. I've heard stories of someone who refinanced their home and then used the money to buy shitcoins. And that, to me, I just find that so unsavory. And I don't want people to have that type of experience when they first interact with crypto. Now, arguably, it's a result of people not doing the three things I talked about earlier, like not doing any research, not understanding what they're investing in. So it's always this hard part of, rules and regulations exist to protect, supposedly to protect us, right? Private citizens. But we also don't want to live in a nanny state. And so there's a fundamental tension. If you were creating permissionless money and the substrate for permissionless financial innovation, which is what Ethereum and a lot of these other, you know, altcoins get pitched as, you also have to be comfortable with the idea that it means there are not going to be a lot of rules and regulations. So I guess my answer is, I see both sides. I would advocate more of the open permissionless finance side. And one of the big issues with crypto is people want, like, this is a problem with custody, the problem with wallets, the problems with exchanges. People want someone else to be responsible. People don't want to take risk themselves. And owning crypto is the antithesis of that. If you own Bitcoin and you own it for the reasons I own it, self-sovereignty, financial freedom, financial privacy, you have to be responsible. And so the fundamental tension, the fundamental problem is an education problem where people don't understand. The point of crypto isn't just to put all your coins on a centralized exchange or into Coinbase's custody thing or like custody it with Fidelity. That's not the fucking point of Bitcoin at all. It's the opposite. And so until people are willing to take responsibility, I guess I don't really feel that bad, because it's personal choice they make. No one's holding gun to their head and saying, buy these shit coins. They're choosing to do it because they want to get rich quickly. And so to me, you know, there is this education we need to give people where it's, hey, if you want to have nice things, like, you have to be responsible. And it means, like your asset managers told you, you have to do the high risk thing.
So it's almost like we need, it'd be cool to have, say, a podcast which covered finance and taught a bit of finance as well. Wouldn't that be helpful?
So this is what my friend Jill Carlson and I are doing. Thank you for the shout out.
I know.
It's called What Grinds My Gears. So
how's that been going?
Good. So we did a little mini run where we did 6 episodes. We tried to do like short 10-minute episodes, 3 topics per episode. Super fun. We got great feedback and everyone wanted us to do slightly longer form one. So we retooled it and it's going to launch mid-January. So we're really excited. We talk a lot about macro markets. We talk a lot about sort of the investor mindset. And we just try to untangle some of these words and ideas people throw around that don't really make sense. Like a lot of what you do with your podcast, right? It's taking these topics that are kind of thorny and just giving people different ways of understanding it through the guests you bring on. So that's kind of our goal.
Well, actually, mine goes back to what you said earlier. I used to go on a Reddit and want to ask these questions and people are like, well, you're a fucking idiot. And I'd like, all right, but I'm pretty sure not everybody understands what sharding is and what decentralization is and how mining works. I kind of want to know. So I'm going to ask these questions. Am I right in thinking with your podcast, did I read somewhere that you keep recording it over and over for perfection?
I told you before we got, I have a bad neurosis. I think this is one of the things people who don't know me personally don't know about me, is I'm a complete crazy person in some ways and I'm obsessive. Which is good for crypto investing, but bad for other things. So when we first started doing it, we had to record each episode a few times. And then I think as you record, you get more comfortable with imperfection. So yep. I'm getting over my neuroses. And then when I did the Skillshare class, we shot it pretty much in as video in one take. So that was a horrifying experience for me because I watched it in retrospect and I was like, oh, why did I say that? Why did I do that? Why do I make that facial expression? But it's a good way to get over it. I don't know if I'll ever fully be over it, but I've gotten better at letting go a little.
What I've learned is that accept the mistakes and then just don't review it. Get somebody else to do it and put it out.
No, but I like it. What's really cool, there's this fashion designer, Rick Owens, and one of the things he said that's always stuck with me is he hates seeing people wear his clothes from prior seasons because it reminds him of all of these mistakes he made. And so I think that's really interesting about crypto, especially if you write or you record podcasts or you tweet, is sometimes I like to go in my Wayback Machine and look at what I was thinking and saying, you know, 2 years ago, a year ago. And it's an interesting sort of exercise to see what's changed. What do you want to work on more? So I kind of like it.
I don't know. I deleted 18 months of tweets and a half my blog post from my website. One, because I don't agree with some of my previous positions, but it was quite an embarrassing exercise to go through. I can't really do that with the podcast. I've gone back and listened to old episodes and I've been like, oh.
Wait, can we talk about this though?
Yeah, of course.
Why did you delete it? Why did you feel the need to delete your tweets?
Because people were sometimes liking things that I'd put out previously that I no longer agree with. So for example, at one point I was really excited by Polymath and I was like, is this going to be huge? And then occasionally I'd see a like and think, oh no, that's misleading. But somebody might, for some godforsaken reason, think my opinion matters and believe that. And I don't want people doing that. So I started the exercise of going and deleting the ones I didn't like. It was just taking so long. So I just deleted the whole lot, started fresh, and it felt good.
So I've had this interesting tension where people like to go back and dig up old tweets and that of mine and be like, oh, you changed your mind. You're a horrible person and a liar. And what I think is so funny is like people are allowed to change their minds. It's called growth. And so I haven't deleted anything ever because like, yeah, I thought that in 2015 or 2016 for these reasons. And then we all learn things and I changed my mind. But it's just weird to me. It's like people using Donald Trump's tweets from 2011 to say things about his politics now. And I'm like, dude, 7 years ago, let it go. Like people are just looking. I just feel like it's such a shame to delete all of that.
I don't think you need old Donald Trump tweets to realize he's an idiot.
Oh, I don't want to talk about politics. Crypto has enough politics.
We won't talk about politics. All right, so
I mean, you've got Theresa May, like you've got your own issues.
Yeah, we have. Well, that's why I keep coming over to America. I want to get away. Okay, so listen, look. So your opinions have changed quite a lot, right? But
yes and no. On some things, on certain assets, like your comment about Polymath, on certain assets and certain people, yes. But broadly, my ideas haven't really changed that much.
I feel like you possibly, from when I started following you to now, you seem a lot more focused on Bitcoin.
Yeah, definitely. I got caught up in the shitcoining, as many of us did.
Put your hand in the cookie jar. We all did it.
I'm still excited about some assets, but I think there's, you know, I started doing this thing around disclosure and transparency late last year. I was like, wait a minute, like I'm talking about these assets. I don't want people to read tweets or go to a conference where I'm speaking and be like, oh, I should buy Tezos because Meltem talked about it, or oh, I should buy like this asset. So I was like, okay, let me just try to be a bit more transparent. There's a difference between being excited about a technology and being excited about an asset because you own it and it appreciating value will make you better off financially. And so to me, I think I just started making that distinction a bit more. And then per the discussion we were having earlier, as I started really understanding that most of these ICOs and tokens were just elaborate rent-seeking schemes, and as I started asking questions and really, you know, frankly, in some cases, they were kind of mean questions, and people would be like, oh, you're so aggressive, you're so mean. And I'm like, if you can't answer this question, like, this piece of shit. No offense, but this doesn't make sense. So I think I just got more confident in speaking my mind.
Okay.
You know, it's funny. I just started reading this book called The Courage to be Disliked. And it's this book about philosophy, about Adlerian philosophy. So I'm sitting in my office reading this book with this cover, and my CMO Fitch walks by and he goes, "Ha!" He's like, "That is the funniest thing I've ever seen, because you have no trouble being disliked. In fact, I think you enjoy it." So highly recommend the book.
Where would you say your opinion has changed most significantly, though?
Oh, around value creation. I do think one of the painful realities is most cryptocurrencies are zero-sum games. They really are. And it goes back to this idea of invest in what you understand and what you know. And frankly, most ICOs, most tokens just don't make sense to me. I don't understand why they need to exist. I don't understand how they function. And in some cases, in speaking with the people who are designing these protocols or these tokens or these systems themselves, I think they're even more confused than I am sometimes. And that's frightening to me, especially when we're talking about not just tens of millions of dollars, which is what maybe, you know, a well-funded startup would have, when you're talking about hundreds of millions, or, you know, in the case of 2017, even billions of dollars on the line. And so what I've really started to realize is a lot of these things are zero-sum games, and there are going to be winners and there are going to be losers. And in a lot of cases, the losers are people who are more on the outside. So that's one. And I think two really is, I wish all of that time and energy and money I'd spent on trying to figure out ICOs and tokens, I wish I had spent it on Bitcoin. It would have been more valuable for my personal growth, and it would have been more valuable just in general for the crypto ecosystem. As I think about, you know, going into 2019, what I want to spend more time on, it's less on the protocol side, but it's really more on networks and applications. So how do we actually create physical compute networks that enable Bitcoin to reach people in different situations where their lives could actually depend on it, or reach other networks? And we can talk a little bit about my experiments with Gotenna, because people talk about mesh like it's going to be the future. There are a lot of challenges. And then I think the second component is, you know, 2019, I really want to think about how we help crypto reach consumers. So to your point, I think we need a culture shift in crypto. People should be allowed to ask questions. I would never want someone to feel dumb, and regardless of whether you showed up a day ago or 10 years ago, you should feel equally welcome. And the crypto community hasn't really done a great job at that, and that's fine. But I think at the application level, we can create better experiences. And you and I have traded notes on this, on, you know, funding perhaps some nonprofit work to create educational resources, but also like little experiences to help people just figure out, well, what's the Bitcoin, how does it work, how do I send $5 Bitcoin to my mom.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to cover kind of crypto resolutions with you, and I've got my own. But before we do that, I've tried to list the different categories in crypto, and just I want to go through them with you, but just kind of get a very short position from you on what, like, what you're thinking about kind of each one. Because I think I've learned a lot from a couple of your podcasts. The one you did with Pomp was great for me. I took a lot from it. So I think it would be useful to hear what you think of this, especially as you're an investor as well. Okay. So I'm just going to go, we'll go in order. Blockchain. Does blockchain matter?
It depends on where. For most of the shit people are selling it for, absolutely not.
Okay. Bitcoin.
100% yes.
What about other coins which are purely currency? Bitcoin Cash, Litecoin, Dash?
Unclear. I don't spend much time on them. People are excited about privacy-focused currencies like Zcash, Monero, Dash. I think Bitcoin actually has some really great research happening that could help make it more private, which is interesting. And then I think Zcash, Monero, and Dash have certain design aspects that are not as secure as thought. So I think privacy is one of these like ideological traps people get stuck in that at its surface sounds good, but when you start examining it, doesn't really make sense. So privacy as a feature, yes. Privacy is a separate coin, I'm not sure. But again, choice, right? So people have choice. So if people choose to give these things value, I'm not going to judge them. I just don't prescribe to that. I do think Ethereum, Tezos, things that are focused on smart contracts in general, less so as hard currency, but more so as enabling contract-based settlement is interesting, right? So being able to escrow funds in a contract, being able to settle a contract, being able to create more automation is interesting conceptually, especially as you start thinking about like machine-to-machine communication, machine-to-machine payments and contracts. As you start thinking about human-machine interfaces, I think there's some interesting overlaps there. I've spent a lot of time with the Ocean team. I'm an advisor to that project. I'm an investor in it as well. I've known Trent McConaughey and Bruce Pond, who are leading that project for the last 4 years. And having spent some time with Trent, I love their view of the world, which is around data and enabling monetization, sharing, consumption of data in new ways with a token. Yet to be seen if the token is functionally required for the network. We have a lot of philosophical debates about this, but interested in that. The whole category of namespacing is really interesting to me. So you have Handshake, Blockstack, IPFS is more sort of file sharing, smart contracts, compute focus, but it has elements of indexation and namespacing that I think are interesting. And then I haven't spent much time on location-based blockchain services, proof of location like Foam and some other stuff like that. But I think these are the services, if I think about what I use, right? I use Google Maps and Uber, which rely on mapping. I use websites and indexes all day, like common referencing. I use money, so money for payments, but also money for store value. And then I care about self-sovereignty and privacy. So as I kind of think about broader macro theme, the things that worry me in my day-to-day life, I look at networks and tokens that are focused on the areas of my life that I feel I'm not happy with today.
Next up, I talked to Meltem about our crypto New Year resolutions. But before I do that, I have a message from my show sponsor, BlockFi. And as I mentioned, regular listeners will know them. They've been a long time sponsor of the podcast, and they made a huge announcement at the end of last year. They announced they had received an additional $4 million in funding, which is going to be used to expand their team and launch some exciting new products, including a crypto savings account that earns interest, which is pretty cool, and crypto-backed credit cards. So look, even if you aren't interested in a loan, I recommend you sign up for their newsletter or follow them on Twitter. Just keep an eye on what they're doing, because I think they're going to have a huge year in 2019. I think BlockFi could be one of the most important crypto companies out there. They're definitely redefining the world of banking with crypto, and I think they're worth a follow. And if you are interested in a crypto-backed loan, well, BlockFi is the leading crypto to USD lender in the US, and they service over 46 states with interest rates as low as 7.9%. They accept Bitcoin, Ether, or Litecoin as collateral. Customers can be funded in USD or GUSD, which is Gemini-backed stablecoin, and you can go from application to funding in as little as 30 minutes. BlockFi is the best way to get USD funding without having to sell your crypto, and applying takes less than 2 minutes. If you visit blockfi.com/whatbitcoindid, you can learn more about using your crypto without selling. Okay, so you've answered on Ethereum as well, because that was in my list. What about utility tokens like BAT and Civic?
I invested in Civic because Vinny is a friend and I'd known him a long time. I'm not sure. I've never used Civic like for doing something on the network, and we're 18 months in, and these things take a long time to build. So I don't really know. And then I have BAT because here's a funny story. When the Brave browser first came out, the way you would quote unquote tip sites is with Bitcoin. So Bitcoin was like $200 at the time. So I put like two or three Bitcoin into my browser because I was tipping $20 a month or so. I was like, I don't want to do this every month. And then when they converted into BAT, what I didn't realize is all of my Bitcoin that were in my browser got converted into BAT. And so now I can't get my BAT out because there's so much BAT in this browser that it breaks the conversion script. So I have BAT, but I can't get it, which is kind of funny. And actually, I think over the last, I was talking to someone about this, over the last 5 years of being an investor in the space, I actually try all of the stuff I look at. So I've, probably spent 50 to 100 Bitcoin, like tons of my own money, actually trying to figure out how things work. Yeah, so That's interesting.
What about stable coins? Because there's so much mixed opinion on them. Like, there was a thing today that came out, I think it was Paxos, where somebody had to give a whole bunch of information to receive their coins or something. How do you feel about stable coins? I have a split view.
I think stable coins are fundamentally uninteresting. It's just a way to move fiat around that's native to a blockchain through tokenizing an asset. But it's just like owning central bank currency, but it's even worse because you don't actually have any rights to it. The issuer can revoke it at any time. So, like, why would I want that? Just fundamentally uninteresting to me.
What about ICOs? Do you think they're dead?
Not dead. I think the model of pre-mines and selling large blocks of pre-mines or doing 100% pre-mine, I think that's definitely dead. It should be dead because we've demonstrated the incentives at play there don't work. They incentivize the wrong type of behavior. So I think the 100% pre-mine model is dead. I think now with Grin and Beam launching, it's kind of an interesting alpha beta test case where Grin has no pre-mine. They're doing, you know, slow mine release, just like Zcash did 2 years ago. And then Beam's doing a slightly different model where they do have a pre-mine, some of which they sold. So we'll see. But yeah, I think the 100% pre-mine utility token ICO is dead. I still get pitched it, which makes me believe in some parts of the world or in some investor communities, maybe it's not dead yet. But yeah, they're pretty much functionally dead.
Right. Okay. Good. Okay. Well, that's a good position for where we are. So let's talk about 2019. Some kind of resolutions. I think we could take turns here. I'll go first. The most important thing for me is to focus on education. And like you said, we shared some notes on this. For me, it's the most important thing. Yep. You know, first, personally, on my podcast, it's great if you're already in Bitcoin or crypto and you understand about it. But if you come new, for example, our conversation now will go over a lot of people's heads. So today I'm already thinking about, right, I think I want to do 10 shows, which are like a structured beginner's guide to Bitcoin, take you from no knowledge to the point where you understand enough to consider if you want to buy some, how you would buy it and how you would secure it. So for me, the first one is focus on education.
Love that. Couldn't agree more. I'm happy to join you on the education side. Have done different types of educational content. It's great. We need more of it. We need it in different places. Okay, goal for me for 2019. I'm going to try to commit to writing more. If nothing else, it's just to test the validity of my ideas. Even though crypto can be a vitriolic place, what I do love about the community is ideas, when they're put out there, people will comment on them, people will rip things apart, they'll find holes in your logic, holes in the data, holes in your assumptions. So I want to start to share more of like the thinking I'm doing privately that's jotted in my notepads that are scattered on my desk, and just try to share one thought or one sort of framework or model or research piece each week and sharpen my thinking. Sharing more, but also giving other people frameworks to think through things, right? So it's like, okay, if here's a framework that I'm using to think about this, someone can take that and say, okay, I've added this, we need to change this. I think that creates shared common knowledge. And again, that's why I like to share all my slides from my talks, because I think it's helpful to create shared common knowledge that people can pull from, people can borrow, people can augment, to start to build more of a theoretical and empirically driven body of knowledge that isn't so hand wavy or so pseudo intellectual with all of these like white papers, which arguably really say nothing.
Okay. Right. So my second one is I want to blur the edges between crypto and real world. So I'm going back to my previous life of advertising, web development, that side of things. And what I'm starting is a course which is going to take people from day one of zero to at the end of the course having a fully functional side gig online with website, email integration, SEO. Within that, I'm going to integrate components of crypto for payments, say with Bitcoin. For me, that as a way of, firstly, not leaving Bitcoin and crypto in its own little bubble where it kind of survives on its own, where it actually integrates with the rest of normal world, and also educates people about accepting crypto in terms of payments as such. So number two for me.
All right, number two for me. And I love all of these goals you're talking about, by the way. I think those are very important. Goal number two for me goes back to sort of the Bitcoin network layer and the broader blockchain network layer. it's investing in more great companies that really focus on resolving some of the infrastructure constraints in the crypto asset space. And when we talk about infrastructure, it's really, you know, some of the work Blockstream's doing with their satellite, which they use it very well for marketing, but I think there are some realities around how useful that actually is. But starting to look at, you know, CubeSats potentially as a way to beam Bitcoin to parts of the world. Looking at mesh networking, and my experience using Gotenna was reasonable, but I think people are very excited about it and they've never tried it. So I'd say to all of them, like, get a Gotenna and actually try it. It doesn't work the way you quite think it does. So it's really investing in more great entrepreneurs who are focused on that networking layer. I believe every person should run their own node. I know that's a pretty crazy idea, but companies like Casa, which I'm invested in, really help make that a reality with their Lightning node. Now there are a few other companies who are coming out with similar models. So don't care how you do it. Having owned many BitSeeds and a 21 Bitcoin computer, I have a little mining museum in my office, like all of the hardware I've owned. But I think it's really important, back to this point of responsibility, to help people understand when you run a node, what that means and what role you actually play in a network. So continuing to work on that networking thesis, whether it's, you know, enabling people to run a node themselves, looking at actual nodes and other blockchain networks that claim to be quote unquote decentralized, like what do nodes in those networks actually do? I don't think anyone really understands what nodes in Stellar do. And one of my portfolio companies, Block Daemon, actually they do these cloud networking services. They were able to launch, I think, a handful of Stellar nodes and take over 15% of the network. This is what I've been doing with Tezzagator, my Tezos delegation service. Bo and Josh and I together work on that. Just learning a lot about cartels and game theory and networks. So I think very important to continue advancing our understanding of what it means to participate in Bitcoin and other networks. It's not just hodling, quote unquote. It's not just biddling as an engineer, which biddle is a horrible word, but it's really thinking about your role in the network, right? And what role you want to play. So starting to parse that out a bit more, I think is going to be huge. Very exciting.
Have you watched the new Black Mirror episode?
The Bandersnatch with the Bandersnatch.
Bandersnatch, yeah.
I have not yet, no. But folks have been talking about it. I'm saving it for...
It's very interesting. Yeah, I watched it yesterday morning. So it runs like...
You watched it in the morning?
Yeah. I'm a parent with two kids, like a chance okay. to do something on my own. So I got up about 6 a.m. and I saw somebody had tweeted about it. I was like, well, I couldn't wait anyway. But yeah. I don't know how old you are, but like I'm 40. And back when I was a kid, it kind of harked back to the computer games where you had to make these decisions. You know, yep. Do you go down the path? Do you pick up the lamp? That kind of thing. But it's an interactive episode of Black Mirror like that. What it made me think of at the time, you know, as stupid as we are in crypto, that we compare everything to crypto, but I was almost thinking like the decisions we make now are like a game. Like, do yeah. I run a full node? Do I buy some Bitcoin? Do I take time to understand about how like self-sovereignty works? Do I try and understand all these things? These decisions I make now, like, will impact where we are, say, in 5 years' time, where if, you know, Bitcoin has continued to grow and continue to expand, and it is a $1 trillion, multi-trillion-dollar market. The decisions I've made now will prepare me for that. So I started to think of it almost like a game and levels. Does that make sense? Or am I being insane?
100%. And actually, I think in 2019, what you're going to see is people rolling out like a framework for like level one of being a Bitcoin holder. Is the cystis. Level two is this. And I think as you progress up levels, it's like, can you self-custody? Can you use a hardware wallet? Are you being secure in how you manage your keys? It's like growth is so important. Education and knowledge are really the most powerful tools that we have. And you know, I've constantly sought to educate myself, and I ask a lot of stupid questions all the time. And I don't care if people think I'm dumb, but you have to actually understand and you have to have that knowledge. And so to me, what you're talking about is using your experience to create tools to spread knowledge at the level you care about, which is sort of that consumer, mom and pop, you know, everyday person who, you know, uses a smartphone probably. What I'm interested in is really educating my peer group, which is people who are fairly sophisticated investors, or they're sophisticated technically, but they are missing some of those key components of really connecting ideas in their head. So just helping them connect some of these ideas that seem abstract and irrelevant, but in fact, to me, form the most critical aspect of what crypto is about, which is one, freedom, but freedom comes with great responsibility. So two, it's okay, now that we've given people freedom, how do we teach them to be responsible? And that, you know, that's, it's hard. It consumes a lot of my time. I've taken responsibility for my own personal assets. So you have to be, if you want to own crypto and you want to custody it yourself, like, you have to constantly learn. And that's why I find it so funny when people are like, oh, like my crypto got stolen. I'm like, well, how did you secure it? And they tell me what they did. And I'm like, well, so like you kind of did a lot of dumb stuff that people told you not to do. So I have a hard time, like, don't help people who don't help themselves is one of my mantras. So two things for 2019 on a personal level. One, stop solving other people's problems. Most of the emails I get are other people trying to get me to solve their problems and help them check things off their to-do list. It's like, no more of that. I'll try to help people to the best of my ability, but I need to do the things I'm here to do. And number two is, like, I'm going to stop helping people who don't help themselves. I feel like I've just gotten into this mentality. Like, when I started in crypto as nobody, I was just a random person. And I just worked really hard and I helped everyone I could in every way I knew how. And now that I have actual, like, a vision in my head of what I want to do, part of it's also starting to say, okay, if a person you've helped repeatedly keeps coming back to you and they keep making the same mistakes, you have to be willing to say, I'm sorry, but I can no longer spend time on this.
It's funny. Most of the things we're talking about keep coming back to education. It's a kind of real central point of the central pillar. And interestingly, I interviewed Alex Gladstein from the Human Rights Foundation recently, and he said the most important thing amongst the 4 billion people who live in under authoritarian regimes is education. So it seems like that's a central point. Okay, a couple of other ones I'm going to throw in there, which aren't personal resolutions, but more kind of broader market things I would wish would change.
Sure.
I would like to see more stuff shipped and shipped early, and a better focus on design and UX. I find design and UX generally horrible, apart from a couple of examples. One of them being one of your investments, by the way, which is Casa. I think their focus on design and UX in everything they've done is excellent. And now I understand why, because I interviewed Jeremy. He told me who he'd employed as a lead designer. Amazing. From Tinder to Casa, which is amazing. There's a couple of market ones for me. What about yourself? What else would you like to see from companies and the market?
I think the big thing is transparency and disclosure. That one's big for me. I think it's really hard for people to trust. One of the reasons in crypto we have such an atmosphere of distrust, as we should, right? You should all question everything, including everything you know about yourself. And it's very painful. Like, I live in this constant state of questioning myself. And it's hard. Like, you take a lot of hits to the ego, but I'm constantly deconstructing myself. And I'm like, okay, why are you thinking that? And a lot of times I realize my thoughts don't make sense. And then you have to go back. Like, it's painful, but I think one of the big things we're lacking is just basic integrity. And it's a result of 2017, 2018, where a bunch of people engaged in behavior. I'm not going to comment on the legality of the behavior because that's like, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not interested in that. But it just crossed a fundamental line of human trust because we're tribal creatures. And so once that line was crossed, like, we have a lot of work to do to restore trust. I'd love to see, I've gotten a lot of shit for disclosing the assets I hold. I disclosed everything, whether I owned one or, you know, a million, and I got a lot of shit for it, and that's fine. But I'm one of the only investors who actually disclosed anything. And I'm like, why isn't anyone giving these people shit? Like, they're up on stages shilling their portfolio on a daily basis and no one's giving them shit. So I think one is, like, let's just personally to take a look inward and say, okay, like, what is the personal responsibility I'm taking? Again, responsibility. And let's just try to have more integrity as an industry. So I'm an investor in Messari for this reason. I think what they're doing with their registry and with these tear sheets they're making is really critical on the project side. I'd love to see more investors. I'm working with Global Digital Finance, which is an SRO. We're just trying to create some basic standards of conduct that investors, exchanges, stablecoin issuers, et cetera, can sign on to. So it's really focused more on these little communities and starting to create some standards. But yeah, just basic integrity, transparency is number one. It's so huge. And I think number two is just a change in the culture. We have created this culture that's, you know, it can be unfriendly. I love it because I like arguing. I think it's fun. I like a healthy debate. What's so funny is, like, I'll argue with someone or have a spirited discussion with someone, and someone will walk away from and be like, oh, like, do you hate that person? I'm like, no, I love that person. We just happen to disagree on something, and then we're having a conversation.
It's funny you should say that, because on number seven on my list, it says stop fighting, and I've put in brackets, I'm probably going to fail.
Oh, but that's what we do. That's like the fun of being a human being is you learn that it's not fighting, right? But keeping it respectful, certainly I agree with. Like, don't call people names. You know, I've gotten some really horrible messages from people. I've had people say really terrible things about me. And I'm like, I don't care personally. It doesn't really bother me so much. But I do think, again, it crosses that line of basic human dignity. I'm like, just act civilized. It's fine to disagree with someone. Like, please do argue and disagree on things. Otherwise, it's going to be very boring. But do it in a respectful, tasteful way. Like, don't call people names. Don't use slurs. Don't cuss. Don't engage in, like, really just unsavory behavior, because it makes all of us look bad. Just try to act civilized. Like, for God's sake, it's not that hard. Just be civilized a little bit.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's funny also, sometimes you meet people in real life, and I've had it a few times. People are like, they say to me, I'm not sure how to take it. They say, oh, you're not as much as a dick as I thought you were. And I'm like, you can't judge me on Twitter.
You know what? So people say that too. They say, you're not as big of a bitch as I thought you were. And I'm like, I don't know how to respond to that. Like, I don't understand the reaction you're going for.
I think sometimes maybe it's just how sometimes you can come across on Twitter. Like you can be spiky. I can definitely be spiky and also wind people up and a little bit of trolling. But I don't think you should judge people on Twitter. You need to meet people in person to get a feel for who they are in reality.
I have no issue being judged. Look, at the end of the day, there's nothing that I've said or done that I would mind having printed on the front page of the newspaper, right?
Oh, well, then we're definitely different there. I've got plenty I wouldn't like out there.
I'm not ashamed. Maybe I'm shameless. Maybe that's the difference.
Yeah, maybe I'm ashamed. Okay, so we're conscious of time.
Yeah.
Let's just look forward now to 2019.
Let's
not talk about price. And I remember when Caitlin Long said to me, price is the least interesting thing about Bitcoin. And what I found is, actually, since I've stopped looking at my blockfolio every 15 seconds, that I've done more work and I've become more interested in Bitcoin. But let's have some predictions, because you said to me, I wrote it down at the start, you said most of the important things are going to happen in the next 18 months. So can you unpack that for me?
Yep. So I think there are a few big things that are going to happen in 2019. I like three. I think three is a nice number, so I'm going to stick to three. I'm going to try to keep it brief, because I do tend to be verbose, for which I apologize. And you should feel free to interrupt me always. Anytime. One is, I think regulation is going to start to develop. We're going to like it in some places. We're not going to like it in others. FINMA just published a great report on digital assets. Very long, but I thought it was spot on. I think the Swiss FINMA have done a wonderful job sort of articulating a clearer regulatory framework. But I think in the US, the SEC is going to continue enforcement. They have cases to keep them busy for the next 15 years. So that's going to continue. I think we're going to see other jurisdictions start to get more aggressive. And I think we're going to see both positive and negative regulatory developments. But I think that's going to be a huge dominating theme. On the regulation issue, people are like, oh, please regulate us. We need it. And I just think that's so messed up. So I'd love to see the industry just adopt some basic standards. I think it would eliminate a lot of the reactionary sort of enforcement that comes down. And we just had some basic standards for the industry. But, you know, having been in Bitcoin for a long time and having tried to coordinate with the Bitcoin community back in 2016 during, you know, the block size wars, people want things their own way. People feel like standards are competitive. So not going to comment on that. But regulation is going to be huge. Number two, I think we're going to see a lot of ICO projects and a lot of people who participate in ICOs and a lot of investors, more importantly, who participate in ICOs. A lot of the stuff that's going on there is, like, it's not very kosher. And I think there are other people who are quote unquote respected who've engaged in some pretty horrific behavior. And a lot more of that's going to start to come to light. Some of the games people have been playing, some of the ways people have been manipulating the market, investors, the news, et cetera. So I think we're going to see a lot of that start to come to light, and people are going to realize like there are a lot of people who are parading around as good actors who have been engaging in some, like, even if it's, again, it's not about legal, illegal, regulated, unregulated. I don't care about that stuff. It's just basic, like, decency. People have been engaging in behavior that's pretty gross that I think is really going to damage their reputation. So I think we're finally going to start to see people pay a social cost and a real financial cost for reputational damage, which has not happened really before in crypto. So I think that'll be good in a way to sort of getting some of the gross people out. So taking out the trash, let's call it that. So that's number two. And then number three, what I'm most excited about in 2019 is people are going to start to understand a lot of these features that people criticize Bitcoin for. Nick Carter from Coinmetrics.io and Castle Island, great person. Love a lot of the work he's done with Coinmetrics and some of the new metrics he and Hasu and others have been working on. But what I love most about Nick is he made this thing called the Bitcoin FUD Dice. It's a 12-sided die, and you roll it, and it has a criticism of Bitcoin, whether it's about mining or not having Turing-complete language or not having privacy, not being scalable, et cetera. I think a lot of these complaints that people have levied against Bitcoin that have been used to promote and try to market other coins are actually going to be possible now with Bitcoin. So I think smart contracts, privacy-enabling features on top of Bitcoin, Lightning Network now with Casa Nodes, some of the work that Elizabeth Stark and her team are doing with LND, some of the work that's being done with Zap and these other Lightning-based services and Y'alls, like awesome stuff, is going to make a lot of stuff with Bitcoin possible. And that's what I'm really excited about, is when people start to realize a lot of the quote-unquote features that people have been using to market and sell shitcoins are actually, one, features no one needs, but two, things that have been possible on top of Bitcoin all along, which I think is interesting. So it'll force a separation of valuable innovation from non-valuable innovation. And crypto suffers from this, like, let's reinvent everything all the time problem. So you have a bunch of engineers discovering finance for the first time. And so I think we're going to start to separate what actually is innovative and interesting from what's just repeating the same problem over and over again with solutions that really don't do anything for anyone.
All right, and the last couple of questions. Who would you like to work with specifically?
Oh, there are a lot of people. I feel really lucky to have been able to invest in a great group of companies, which are all on my website.
I've seen them. I know it's like picking between your children, but what of your investments are you most excited about? And that doesn't mean you have to discredit. Like, I can tell you my favorite child.
Out of your two children?
No, I can't.
Just Peter. Okay. Do not let your children listen to these podcasts.
I've only said it because my son's just walked past.
Is it your son?
Yeah, he's not. He lives with me full time, but he's not allowed on his PlayStation while I'm doing interviews. So he just wanders around the house waiting for me to finish so we can get on FIFA.
Well, that's what my mom's like looking at me. My parents are staying with me for the holidays. My mom's looking at me. She wants like roast something.
She doesn't want to play FIFA.
She actually put a note. She taped a note on my bedroom door saying, please be quiet. Melton is recording. Like, I love it so much. One of my favorite companies, I've talked about Casa a lot. Jeremy, Jameson, Carolyn, Elena, the team at Casa. Number one, they're wonderful people. I like to invest in awesome people, because I think I love helping great people implement their ideas. And at the end of the day, everything's about relationships and people. So love that team, love their vision. I think they're going to have an amazing 2019. I'm so excited to be part of that ride. Other things I'm excited about. I'm very excited about Messari actually starting to roll out their registry again, like going back to this transparency disclosure idea. And then Ryan and I worked together for almost 2 years at Digital Currency Group. We're really the first two people there working with Barry, like building that. So I feel, you know, Ryan and I have been through some times together, some great times, some really dark times. So he's like my brother. And I like what he's doing. Other ideas I'm excited about, So Picks and Shovels just merged with CoinVantage, which is MG Stover's sort of portfolio management solution. I think when it comes to thinking about services in the crypto investing space, right now we have kind of this piecemeal approach where if you want to manage your own crypto, you have to get like 30 different services and cobble together your own approach. I'd love to see more integrated service provision where you have one sort of service provider you work with who then integrates with a bunch of other things. So you don't have to go out and get every piece of the puzzle. You just go one place and you can kind of pick who you want to use for each part. I think that's cool. I'll stop there, but I love all my companies equally. They're all great people.
We also have a mutual friend who's got a project that I really like, which is Michael Dunworth at Wire.
I love Michael. He's great. So funny. Not a great skier. I love you, Michael. You are not a great skier. He, Jill Carlson, and I went skiing together. And it was with Kathleen Brightman and Arthur Brightman from Tezos. We had this ski house for a weekend. I think we drank like 90 beers one night. It was disgusting. There were like 8 of us. And we just, it was the funniest. Michael's one of the funniest humans I've ever met. He's also incredibly smart, incredibly hardworking. We've invested together. We've worked together at DCG. Now we work together independently. You know what's great about crypto? I have met so many great humans as a part of working in this community for the last 5 years. And so many of them have gone from being work colleagues and work acquaintances. Someone I met at a meetup has become one of my, you know, closest friends. These people are now my family. It's crazy.
Well, I just don't think enough people know Michael and what he does and how great he is. And
that's because he actually works. He doesn't do what you and I do, just like fly around, gallivant around. He works. He runs a business.
He does. But I'm quite excited about his business as well, because there's a real use case for Bitcoin there, like a genuine use case.
Well, what he's doing, what Elizabeth Raciel is doing with Bitpesa, I think it's really interesting. There are a number of interesting applications that people are working on. They're just outside of that like Silicon Valley clusterfuck, excuse my language, where, you know, it's just bros promoting bros. I'm like, there are a lot of people outside of that little cluster working on really cool things, but they just choose not to spend their time, you know, flying to conferences or being influencers. They're doing the hard work.
Well, listen, this was everything I expected it would be. Brilliant. It's going to be a great way to kick off 2019. I can't wait to get it out there, Melton.
But Peter, can we start with a moment of gratitude? Can we end, sorry, with a moment of gratitude? Because I'm trying to be more grateful, right? What are you grateful for? Like, what, looking back on 2018, like, what's the one experience, thing, person you're most grateful for?
Meeting Jameson Lopp.
Did you shoot guns with him?
I shot guns with him. So it was a fundamental change to what happened, the direction of the podcast. Because when it started, I interviewed a couple of traders who would agree to come on. And I just thought I was going to do this dodgy little trading podcast that meant nothing. And then I saw this dude on Twitter with this huge beard and guns defending his Bitcoin. I was like, who the fuck is this guy? He is cool. So I found who he was, went on his website, and I wrote to him. I said, look, I've got this podcast. It's really nothing, but I would love to come out and do an interview with you in person. And I made this commitment to do all my first interviews in person. I did the first 25, and he was like, cool. So I flew out to North Carolina, met up with him. We did the interview, and he then took me to barbecue. And by the way, I told this to a couple of people. I was a vegetarian at the time, and I didn't have the heart not to tell him. So I ate barbecue.
Oh, my gosh.
And then we went and shot guns. So not only was that experience brilliant, but he's given me so much support in the background, like with just advice, connecting with me with people. That kind of started this, because one of the reasons my podcast has done very well is I've managed to get good guests, and he kind of helped start that. And he linked me up with a couple of people. So I'm very grateful to him, but it's very hard. Again, I feel grateful to every single person who comes on the podcast, because look, there are so many. It gets to the point where it must get annoying how many times you're asked, and everyone gives up time. I'm not paying them. You know, you're giving up some time now. Yeah. Despite losing all that money, I have a podcast that generates revenue, you know, but it's at the point now I can do this full time. I can be around for my children and I can still, you know, use some of that money maybe to go to conferences or meet people.
But this is to me, like, this is about freedom. So I love that you've been able to take this passion for crypto and turn it into something that provides you with income, that enables you to do more of what you want to do. That's amazing.
But there's a bunch of people who've helped along the way, like Laura Shin. I've talked to her a few times. She doesn't, yeah, and she doesn't agree she's helped me, but she has. But yeah, Jameson kicked it off a lot for me, but a bunch of other people are, you know, in different places and times, and I'm just hugely grateful for that because, you know, divorce is a terrible thing, and it's terrible on the children. My son lives with me full time, my daughter 50-50, but having this allows me to get up in the morning and make breakfast and get them to school and then come back. You know, if they forget some kid, I can go in and drop it off. I can come back. I can pick them up at 4 o'clock. I can do their dinner and do homework. You know, they have to put up with me sometimes working funny hours, like interviews in the evening. But overall, it gives me the freedom to be the dad around for them when they need it, but also earn an income that can give them an okay life. So, yeah, I'm grateful for the podcast and the Jameson, etc.
I love that. And I'm now standing between you and getting burgers and playing video games, which I don't want to do. I don't want to stand between you and FIFA and burgers. It's a horrible thing. But I do think gratitude's so important. I'm trying to every day write down one thing I'm grateful for. So today I was thinking about it. I was like, what am I grateful for? You know what I'm really grateful for?
It's for Liverpool being top of the league, isn't it? Because me, you've waited 29 years to win the league.
No, so look, you said earlier you're 40. I'm 32, right? So Liverpool's your thing. You do that. What I'm really grateful for is thinking about it this morning. Like, I have such an amazing family. I have the privilege of choice, right? The privilege of being able to take really, really big risks in my life. And like my dad got me excited about science and chess and math at a young age. My mom's always helped me through things. She helped me when I left a digital currency group in January of last year. She helped me like book flights for my own business that I run. She helped me deal with invoicing and contracts and finding lawyers. So it's just really, and my brother got me into Bitcoin. We grew up playing video games together. And it was like, hey, this Bitcoin thing. I think having an appreciating family, and you don't get to choose your family. So I was just reflecting, I was like, man, if I think about like the sum of all of the experiences that make up where you're at today in this present moment, I'm like, that's huge.
I think that's a fantastic way to end the year. But for everyone who listens to this, hopefully it'll be a great way to start the year. You can finish by telling people how they can get hold of you, who you want to hear from, who you don't want to hear from.
I love hearing from everyone. I'm always open to a conversation. Love good questions. I've never blocked anyone, which I'm proud of. So for me, Twitter is usually how I like to have conversations. So at @melt_dem, come find me, come talk shit, come argue. It's fun. I did launch my own website just to put my investments up there and to link to some of my stuff. So meltandemirrors.com has some resources if you are interested. And that's where my token disclosure is and the companies I'm invested in and slides from talks, et cetera. Just trying to centralize in one place. And then I'm at CoinShares, so a crypto asset manager. If you're interested in crypto asset management, we're going to start a CFO roundtable series in 2019. So just trying to develop the practice of crypto finance, doing a lot of work with banks and financial institutions and academia to try to work on that, which will be fun. So yeah, at all are welcome. I love to discuss everything. And then doing a series of meetups around GoTenna, mesh networking, et cetera, in New York. So if you're excited, interested, we have a great office in Union Square that you're welcome to use. So just ping me. My DMs are open on Twitter. I'd love to hear from all of you. And thanks, Peter, for having me on. So fun.
Not a problem. I'm glad to have you on. And yeah, I hope you have a great new year and you can tell your mom she can get cooking.
She can roast whatever she's been waiting to roast. Hopefully not me.
Yeah, hopefully not you. Okay, look, I hope you have an amazing 2019 and I hope we can do this one day in New York in person.
We should, definitely. Or in London.
Or in London.
Granted, we can take those premium economy flights on Norwegian. That's my carrier preference.
All right, well, listen, look, have a great 2019. Have a great New Year's Eve as well.
Thank you. See you in the new year.
Okay, so what did you make of that? How great is Melton? As I said, if you don't follow her, then make sure you do. Also, you make sure you check out her podcast with Jill Carlson. Links to that are in the show notes. I will definitely be checking out the relaunch of that podcast to improve my knowledge in finance. Okay, so it's a new year, 2019. What are we going to do differently? 2018, what a year. I think it hit a lot of us hard. Not everyone, you know, some people made some great decisions, but I think it hit a lot of us hard. Maybe some of us shouldn't be trading. Maybe some of us have got some of our time preferences wrong. Are we trying to get rich here too quickly? So what did you make of our crypto New Year resolutions? Have you made any yourself? I know my focus this year is going to be taking it a bit more slowly. I'm primarily going to be focused on Bitcoin, learning more, creating more, create more educational resources, and growing my own Bitcoin stash. So that's what I'm going to do. What are you going to do? But great to hear from you. If anyone's got any cool ideas, we'd love to hear from you. And as I mentioned in the intro, I'm going to be launching a side gig course. If you're interested in that, if you want to launch your own side gig and you don't know where to start, there's a link to that in the show notes. You can register for that. It will have a free option, so don't worry. It's not just to make money off everyone. And also keep an eye on my Bitcoin 10-year State of the Nation special, which will be coming at the end of January. I'm going to be interviewing a bunch of Bitcoin people to just find out what they're thinking about, what's happened over the last 10 years and their predictions and hopes for the next 10 years. Okay, and also, thank you to everyone who supported the show last year. Plan to go from strength to strength this year. Want to grow it more. So here's a bunch of things you can do to help the show if you want to support what I'm doing. Firstly, you can become a patron. So you can head over to patreon.com/whatbitcoindid. I'm now up to 58. That's great. I can't believe I actually have got that many. But thank you so much to everyone who does that. If you want to get the show early or you want to be a contributor, just head over there and sign up. If you're interested in Patreon but you don't really want to use their service, I do have a couple of people who subscribe by Bitcoin. So if you want to do that, just email me on hello@whatbitcoindid.com. You can get the show early without ads. Let me know about that. You can also become a show sponsor if you're interested in doing that. I had over 500,000 downloads last year. So if you want to reach some new audiences, feel free to email me. We can book a call and we can talk about how you can use the show for that. You can leave me a review on iTunes or click on the subscribe button. Both help with the ranking of the show in iTunes, which would be pretty cool if you do that. You can follow me on social media. I'm on Medium. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. I'm at What Bitcoin Did on everything, but I'm also at Peter McCormack for my personal Twitter. Feel free to follow me, reach out to me. I'll talk to anyone. You can check out my website, which I'm going to do loads more work on this year. Got to change a few things out of date, but you can check that out at www.whatbitcoindid.com. I want to fill that full of new helpful resources for people. You can sign up to my newsletter on the website as well, and you can share the show out with your friends and family. Okay, lots of cool new stuff coming up this year. I'm very excited to produce some new shows for you, provide some new content. If you want to reach out to me, if you've got any ideas, you can get me on hello@whatbitcoindid.com. Yeah, and I'm just looking forward to 2019. It should be a big year for all of us.